Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 21st, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
And we are back with The Sign of Four, Chapter 2, this being the introduction of a pretty young lady. That's not the title, right? The title of this chapter is not the introduction of a pretty young lady, but it sure could be, right?
So guys, do you remember how in yesterday's chapter, Holmes was berating Watson for putting too much romance in the narrative versions of Holmes's hard scientific calculations? What in the world would Holmes think about this chapter?
It's still spring here in the hemisphere. Young love. Somebody's smitten. Who's smitten? I don't know.
How much of that is because we know that this is the Mary? How much of that is us reading into this because of our back knowledge?
Hey, we're going to be reading the ending, and don't take away Pam's thunder here.
Okay.
This chapter could be called Watson Has a Crush, like from the beginning. Let's start at the beginning, the opening. Miss Morstan entered the room with a firm step and an outward composure of manner. She was a blonde young lady, small, dainty, well-gloved, and dressed in the most perfect taste. There was, however, a plainness and simplicity about her costume, which bore with it a suggestion of limited means. Now, okay, so this is a description of a character, fair enough, and you know Watson, he can be pretty prone to saying, this beautiful young lady walked in. But he's focusing on her dress and how she has like a simplicity about her, so she's not wealthy. But then he very quickly goes to this sentence, which is quite famous. In an experience of women, which extends over many nations, and three separate continents, I have never looked upon a face which gave a clearer promise of a refined and sensitive nature. All right, my friends, that is not us reading into this, right? So Watson's telling us, I have known women, many nations,
I know women,
three continents. Okay. Never before has he looked upon such a face as the face of Miss Mary Morstan. This guy, this is love at first sight, my friends.
Well, not only that, is everything he is describing about her, if a person objectively was looking at Watson, he's describing about himself. He's a person with limited means. He's a little refined. He's taking, stuff like that. And the way that he's describing her outlook could be describing him.
And he's always well gloved. I mean, that's something to look
well
for.
Well gloved. That's your favorite part.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match.
Okay, so let's talk about well gloved for a minute. You can have nice clothing. It is possible to purchase nice clothing. But if you don't have the means for nice clothing, gloves are certainly an inexpensive way to have a very nice piece of your outfit. That's pretty smart.
I have no experience in this, Steve.
Thank you for that, Chip. I think, well, being well gloved also means being properly modest, right? So you're fully covered, your hands are covered, you're wearing nice gloves, and you're a very modest, appropriate young lady, an appropriate object of desire for a nice young man like Watson.
I think we've set it up now. There'll probably be something happening.
Now, I love that while Watson is waxing poetic about the lovely client who's just walked in, Sherlock is getting excited. So as she says she has a good case for him, Holmes rubbed his hands and his eyes glistened. He leaned forward in his chair with an expression of extraordinary concentration upon his clear-cut, hawk-like features. So he's literally rubbing his hands in enthusiasm, not about Miss Mary, but about a case. Because don't forget, he's just been shooting up. So he's looking forward to some brain work.
He's high as a kite and ready to do a mystery.
Watson still feels that he's not a part of the team at this point in the idea of Sherlock Holmes and Watson. He rises to leave. He excuses himself because there's a case and he's not a part of the team here. I felt that my position was an embarrassing one. He says, "You will, I am sure, excuse me," while he rises from his chair. To my surprise, the young lady held up her gloved hand to detain me. If your friend, she said, would be good enough to stop, he might be of inestimable service to me. I relapsed into my chair. She stops him. She is saying, hold on, but she's not talking to Watson here. She's still talking to Sherlock. If your friend would be good enough to stop. That's a very interesting thing there.
Victorian flirting, Steve. That's what it is right there. She has the same feelings.
Oh, yes. Now, and Mary's problem reminds us that this is an early story, right? We have a mystery here rather than a murder. So Mary is in a situation where somebody is sending her one valuable pearl each year on the same date. And she has received a very convenient message, right? So,
oh yeah.
Be at the third pillar from the left outside the Lyceum Theater tonight at 7 o'clock. If you are distrustful, bring two friends, not one friend, two friends. You are a wronged woman and shall have justice. Do not bring police. If you do, all will be in vain. Your unknown friend. Now, who is this unknown friend? And how nice.
I don't know.
Friend, thank you. How nice that this friend is like, don't just bring one guy, bring a couple.
Find two guys. You don't know two guys, so just find any random two guys. Gee, Doyle, I wonder which two guys it's going to be.
Well, I was wondering how Doyle was going to make sure that they got all three of them there. And look, he just put it right there in the sentence.
It's a little too convenient. That's just a hair over the line here, Doyle.
And Mary tells her problem in very clear, succinct way. She talks about how her father, Captain Morstan, disappeared on the 3rd of December, 1878, 10 years ago. He had been in the same regiment as Major Sholto, who's now retired in Upper Norwood. And there was some sort of, you know, mystery around their service in India. Mary has kept all of her documents. And I love how Sherlock says, you are certainly a model client. You have the correct intuition. And so I felt like that was Watson being like, oh, my friend likes this girl too. Yes.
She kept all the right paperwork. This is the best tax guy you've ever been to.
No. I'm thinking this. Doyle is basically telling the audience, like, if you're going to be part of a mystery, let me show you how to bring your evidence to the detective.
Yes. Like, she has not only the notes, but also the envelopes with postmarks, which is something Sherlock always likes to look at. I mean, good job, Mary. We like this girl.
Watson certainly likes this girl and wants to talk about her.
I actually really love this when he says, he just, you know, you have a new crush, you want to talk about it. What a very attractive woman, I exclaimed, turning to my companion. He had lit his pipe again and was leaning back with drooping eyelids. Is she? He said languidly. I did not observe. You really are an automaton, a calculating machine, I cried. There is something positively inhuman in you at times. He wants to talk about this girl. And Sherlock's like, I didn't notice.
Well, it's because he's high on cocaine.
Is it? Or is it because he doesn't notice women?
I don't know, Steve.
Well, and you
maybe Sherlock's jealous. You never know.
Or is this truly what Doyle was trying to lay out? The idea of the automaton, this machine that is Sherlock Holmes, that is so focused on the case, he does not see those details that we think are important. He overlooks those details as completely irrelevant to the case.
This is science, not romance, right? So this is a good client because she has all the correct paperwork, not because she's pretty and well-gloved.
Or the misunderstanding that humans are not machines.
Well, and it's interesting because when, like, Watson cries out, a calculating machine, Sherlock smiles gently. It is of the first importance, he cried, not to allow your judgment to be biased by personal qualities. A client is to me a mere unit, a factor in a problem. The emotional qualities are antagonistic to clear reasoning. I assure you that the most winning woman I ever knew was hanged for poisoning three little children for their insurance money. And the most repellent man of my acquaintance is a philanthropist who has spent nearly $250,000 upon the London poor. So Sherlock is welcoming this characterization of himself as a calculating machine or an automaton. And this really speaks to the epistemological conflict that Doyle is setting up between these two men, where Watson's like, come on, man, you gotta notice people as people. And Holmes is like, no, I don't. She's a client. She's a unit, a factor in a problem. It's all science all the time. And that's how I get things done.
And of course, all I can think of is Lieutenant Commander Data on the Star Trek, yes, Enterprise playing Sherlock Holmes, because this is absolutely the idea of the automaton, the android, trying to understand humanity and looking at it through the lens of Sherlock Holmes. This is right on. I'm with this story so far.
Absolutely. Well, I'll just throw it out that some of the most evil things have been done to humans on when they think about people as cogs in a machine.
Of course.
And so, as opposed to being humans.
And that's why Watson is writing this story, not Sherlock.
And this is why Doyle keeps hammering us with the idea of we're going to ignore the romance, we're going to go straight for the mystery, and does exactly the opposite with this.
Uh-huh. He's showing us the opposite of what Holmes is telling us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, precisely. Yeah. I love that after this little discussion of automatons and pretty girls, we get like some pretty interesting philosophy here. So Holmes does a little handwriting analysis, as he is wont to do with his monograph on the subject. And then he heads out. And on his way out, he gives Watson a book to read. And it's Winwood Reade's Martyrdom of Man from 1875. Now, this is not exactly what Watson is in the mood for, right? This is a secular universal history of the modern world. So, you know, something to keep his mind occupied as he thinks about this big girl. And so
Doyle, high on cocaine, gives this rousing, here, read this exciting book.
Oh my to keep God. Your mind off of the pretty girl, to keep your mind occupied, Watson. Here's something.
And since we don't have heat, go take a cold shower.
This is the equivalent of a cold shower. Secular universal history of the modern world is that's a cold shower in a book.
Well, I actually looked up this book, which I'm afraid I haven't read despite my great love of the Victorian period, and it is considered like one of the main philosophical texts of the time. It's a book greatly admired by H.G. Wells, Winston Churchill, George Orwell, a lot of people who also put together some of the great philosophical statements of the early 20th century. So this is a book that, according to one historian, is a substitute Bible for secularists. And so Reed tries to read the development of Western civ in terms analogous to those of natural sciences. So he's really trying to figure out like how Darwin works into contemporary Victorian culture. So it's a book we should probably all read. I'm like a little embarrassed that I haven't read it despite my love of the period. So I'm putting it on my long list.
I'll just say I've read it and nobody will know the difference.
What was your favorite part, Chip?
At your dinner parties this weekend, you will certainly be able to say, oh, well, in Winwood Reade's Martyrdom of Man. Yes. Then just go on with whatever the heck you want to talk about, because
has anybody read it? Has anybody read it? No. Let me talk about it for just a moment.
I was in Barcelona.
Yeah, that's right. When in Barcelona.
Now, you guys, there is zero evidence in this chapter that Watson even opened this no doubt fascinating book. He says, I sat in the window with the volume in my hand, but my thoughts were far from the daring speculations of the writer. My mind ran upon our late visitor, her smiles, the deep, rich tones of her voice, the strange mystery which overhung her life. If she were 17 at the time of her father's disappearance, she must be 27 now, a sweet age when youth has lost its self-consciousness and become a little sobered by experience. So,
oh my, the experienced woman. She's a smitten kitten. Oh, yes.
He's just sitting there with this giant volume in his hand, thinking about Mary and thinking, oh, I wonder how old she is. No, that's a good age. Yeah, 27. That's a perfect age. That's the best age.
So, he's definitely not 40.
Right? Worst age for women.
Oh, Doyle.
And then, guys, we go straight to the ending of this short chapter. So I sat and mused until such dangerous thoughts came into my head that I hurried away to my desk and plunged furiously into the latest treatise upon pathology. So, I mean,
don't get too excited. Don't get too excited.
Well, I guess like philosophy, it's just a little too, you know, ephemeral for the moment. He needs pathology. What was I, an army surgeon with a weak leg and a weaker bank account, that I should dare to think of such things? She was a unit, a factor, nothing more. If my future were black, it was better surely to face it like a man than to attempt to brighten it by mere will-o'-the-wisps of the imagination. The end. Oh, yeah. So he is so conflicted. And he's trying to tell himself exactly what Sherlock just told him, right? Mm-hmm. She's a factor, a unit in the problem. Ooh, but the will-o'-the-wisps of the imagination are hard to get away from, my friends.
Chasing him through the woods. Oh, my goodness. Nature must find a way here.
Once again, this is Doyle bringing up these big topics. He says words like, this is not about romance. This is about the science, the forensics, the detective mystery. But at the same time, that's exactly the opposite of what he's doing. He is giving us a huge romantic moment here and laying out why it's important for us to focus on that. This is good writing.
What champagne will they be trying that evening?
These are people of limited means. Except for her giant... Except she's got all these pearls, right?
He was drinking a bottle of wine, a French wine, the other in the first chapter. And
it seems wine like... from Indiana. France, okay. France is right there.
Well, from Burgundy. From Burgundy is where he actually got the wine. And of course, you know, he doesn't have the means for cocaine or morphine. So, you know,
but you never know. But let me ask you guys. So, okay, we've reached the end of the second chapter. We have a mystery, although, like, what are you more interested in? Like, is Watson going to get the girl or who sent the girls? It's both, right?
Well, but because of our perspective, because we know this is the Mary, I'm definitely focusing on that. And I don't know how much of that is because of my perspective and how much of it is because of Doyle's writing. I'm still stuck on the idea that I'm bringing knowledge to this that is not in the text.
Well, come on.
Well, I think that this is totally, this mystery is odd. I received six pearls. Yes, here's some handwriting samples. Oh, we got to meet this person with my two friends. But two at the friends. Same time, we get this bookends of Watson describing this lady who is absolutely perfect for him. And at the end, he's like, well, you know, she's absolutely perfect for me. But, you know, we've got this mystery we got to solve. Anyway, I think we're going to get solve both of these things.
And it's great narrative momentum, right? Like, we definitely can't wait for next month's chapter because we want to know both, like, what is this weird thing with this pearl? Why did this guy say, this person, I shouldn't say, this mysterious friend say you could bring two friends? So what's that meeting going to be like? But also, is it possible that Mary likes Watson too? We really want to find out, right?
The good news is we don't have to wait till next month, Pam. The good news is we only have to wait till tomorrow because we're doing a daily podcast for the next 100 years.
Foreseeable future, until we're all vaccinated.
This is a long process, but yes, the good news is tomorrow we will find out some of the answers to our questions. Maybe not too many. It's only chapter 3. There's not probably going to be a lot of answers, but hopefully everybody out there is listening along, paying attention, and enjoying this as much as we are. I think we're really enjoying this potential here. There's a lot of potential to this story. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Send us an email. Send us your pictures. We would love to see your pictures of Holmes and Watson. And now, maybe Watson and Mary. Maybe we can get some well-gloved illustrations this week, Pam. That would be wonderful.
I love it.
Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all of that feedback from around the world, and go to our dedicated website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all of our conversations that we've been having over this entire canon. We're going to get to the end of the Sherlock Holmes canon, Pam.
Easily. It seemed hilarious that first day when I was like, well, no worries, 56 short stories, 4 novels, and now 2 novels and 12 short stories to go.
That's amazing. It is amazing what has happened in history and how the world has changed since we started this podcast. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflo.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
Greater than.
Greater than. What I want to talk about is what I want to thank you for.
He might be of inestimable service to me.
Inestimable.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.